Welcome to Turning Pages, a series of in-depth conversations with authors about their works.
Well, the Cold Case Festival of Crime Literature is bringing Wayne Arthurson's latest book to Winnipeg audiences. And before that, he joins us here on the show to talk about Dishonor in Camp 133, the latest Sergeant Neumann mystery. Welcome to the show, Wayne.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be here. Although I miss coming to Winnipeg because I have a lot of family in the Manitoba area, and they always make a big road trip to come visit me.
Oh, that's nice.
When I have literary events, but so COVID prevents this kind of stuff. So hopefully I'll get there and be in person one more time.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, I have to imagine as an author, the solitary nature of writing the book, if you're a people person, the solace is to be found in those book tours and the live events and the opportunity to hear from people who've read your work.
Yeah, that's part of it. I'm not really an introvert. I'm sort of an introvert extrovert. I'm very solitary in my writing, but I really love meeting people and going out and having people say nice things about my work or just hanging out and having a good time. So I miss that. But, you know, this makes it easier too, because then I can do events anywhere. I mean, I've done events, you know, in the United States and things like that without having to travel there. So that makes it helpful.
Yeah. So in terms of, like, I mean, because this is a Canadian focused book, right? I'm obviously it's set at a detention camp in near Lethbridge. But like, do you find this is like, there's a universality to it because it's crime fiction and that just doesn't seem to have borders?
Yeah, crime fiction has that. I mean, there's a lot of crime, you know, the crime novels have certain things that are very universal. There's it's always a murder or death, and the world is turned upside down somehow, and someone tries to make it right. And I think that's one reason crime fiction had these universal terms. And as well, it has a universal appeal because, in a sense, the world is made better slightly by someone, even if it's in they're considered traditionally a bad person, like in my novels. My characters are not always the best people in the world, but they try to do their best or solve the crime at the time. So yeah, so it doesn't matter, I don't think, where crime happens. It's just people just enjoy it. And from what I've gathered from meeting crime fiction fans, any place, if you set a novel in a new place they've never seen, they get very excited. They really like that. They like new settings, new characters that they haven't seen before. It's quite exciting to them.
So how did you hit upon Camp 133 as a setting? I mean, because this is the second book. Obviously, we didn't get a chance to talk when you released your first book. But mm-hmm. in terms of like developing this place as the setting for these two mysteries.
Well, I was researching another book completely when I came upon the camps. I did hear about them a long time ago, but it didn't really hit me. But I was researching a book, a history book for hire, which I do that once in a while. And I was in the Lethbridge area. And it just popped up in archives and things. And I went, whoa, this is a neat place. And there's photos. And I went, oh, that's a cool place to, you know, kill someone and have a murder mystery. So I set it aside, the setting. And once I finished that book I was working on, I was hired to do, then I started thinking more about it, doing more research and discovering that these were like, you know, not just camps. These were like, you know, I guess at the time, some of the biggest towns in Alberta, like you're talking like 13,000 people. So I thought this is a great place to have sort of an enclosed also village mystery, you know, where people can't get out. And there's various factions that you have in various village mysteries, you know, different people, rumor mongers and things like that. So I just thought it was a perfect place to murder someone. And the truth is there were murders in those camps at the time. So they're I just sort of fictionalized some of this truth and made it into novels.
So what is researching those camps look like in terms of, you know, like you obviously said you were working on like a history for hire project, but then, you know, set it aside and then went back to explore this within the crime context. What kind of research are you doing specific to building out the world of the camp within like these two novels?
The research was difficult because there isn't a lot. I mean, the Lethbridge Galt Museum has a bunch of information. There's some things in the Alberta archives. There's a few books out there, but there wasn't a lot because they, you know, once they the camps were closed, they just bulldozed them and moved on. And a lot of people aren't aware of that they existed. So it was tough to find information. I did find a few books that had a lot of good information. One had a nice map that someone had drawn that I could use. And so once I went from there, I try to find first person interviews, but at the time I was reaching, most of them were, you know, I reached out to certain people I know and said, no, they're most of them are gone, or even their family members are gone. They passed on, because they're talking World War II. They would have been in their late 90s. Mm. Some of the things about the German army, I have a neighbor who's in his mid 90s, who was in the German army briefly when he was a teenager near the end of the war. So he gave me a bit, but it was tough. And I got as much as I could. And then fictionalized things and just sort of try to create a place based on the research I had to create an interesting place, interesting story. There's the good things that there were murders there already helped, although the murders happened in the Medicine Hat one, but I moved to the Lethbridge because I know the Lethbridge area much better. And it was easier to get to if I wanted to do research.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, the central character, Sergeant Neumann, is the head of civil security. Was civil security like a legitimate thing? Like, you know, because basically it operates as like a sense of like the Germans policing themselves underneath the auspices of these Canadian guards.
Well, they were given, because the camp is so big, the Canadians just said, since you have military institutions in place, you just run it like a military camp. And we'll just supply you and we'll with supplies and sort of keep an eye on things and make sure things aren't going crazy. Although things did go crazy in the real world, but for the head of civil security, I knew when I created the character, I had to give him a position where he was like the chief of police or local cop. So that's what I created, this sort of position in civil security that I'm not even sure if they had a position like that. It's just something I created to make it and to give him, also have his assistant. So you have a cop and his deputy, and they would go out and sort of keep things clean over, you know, basic things, you know, keep people out of trouble outside of the military aspects of things. And so that's why I went that way.
Right.
Yeah.
Rather than having like, say, a Canadian guard who sees a crime and, or like, you know, finds a body and then decides to investigate.
Yeah. I thought it'd be more interesting to have the Germans investigate themselves, because part of my research into the, not just the camps, but the, you know, the World War II, each sort of part of the German armed forces, their war effort, had their own political factions within each specific one. And then, you know, where the bigger areas, you know, you had the more of the party members and the non-party members. They all had their own little, as all military operations do, they all have their own little political factions. So that made it more interesting. And the truth is that, you know, Canadians didn't go in as much as guards, because it's 13,000, you know, German soldiers. It made more sense just for them to let them run themselves.
Right.
Have a whole, you know, a thousand, they would need thousands of guards if they had to run it as if, you know, we're going to keep an eye on everybody.
Now, you mentioned your neighbor who'd been a German soldier. That, like, what kind of research did you have to do into, you know, military structure or military history in Germany? Because, I mean, even you've got your central character had served in the Great War prior to this. Mm-hmm. Like, to build out his kind of backstory, what kind of research are you doing on First World War, on interwar years? Is there a certain level you need to hit for verite?
I'm not sure. I mean, I'm a big fan of history, so some of the stuff I already knew already. Mm-hmm. And some of the stuff I just went, okay, this is going to be fun. I'm going to do as much research as I can into World War II, especially around different factions in the military and the German military and things that are events of the time. So there's so much information on that already. There's, you know, tons of books written about World War II from various points of view, tons of books written about World War I and all the intervening years. I mean, they're still teaching that in high school. My daughter's in high school, and they're going, she's like, oh my God, we're learning about World War One, World War Two. I said, they're still teaching that? They still are, but from my high school. So there's all that, there's a lot of information there, but there's a point where you got to go, I have too much stuff and I can't go in too far deep. I have to start writing. And so you just sort of, as you start writing, you find a hole, there's a historical hole, and you go, it's like, okay, I got to find out what happened here. And so you go research that part, and then you come back and try to fix it up.
Are you able to like self-identify, like when you've kind of reached like the nadir of your research, like you're like, okay, I think I maybe have gone down the rabbit hole deep enough. I need to climb back out and start writing again.
Yeah. Usually I start doing that. And usually I usually write the first, when I'm working on a story idea, usually I write the first chapter and I see if it works for me. If, you know, if it seems entertaining, if I see, I have a voice, and if I get the characters right, and then I go do more research and then come back and try to fill it out. But a lot of it is, you know, I'm writing, I've dug myself a hole or something, or the historical space, I need to fill it in with something that's real. So I just go research this sort of specific thing. Some of them has to do with weaponry, some of them has to do with what's happening specifically on that date in the war everywhere else. So you just sort of go quickly, the internet's perfect for that. So you just go Google, and you know, you try to stay away from Wikipedia. But you go to other places, and there's a plethora of information on World War II out there. So it's almost unlimited, but there's a time where you got to stop and say, okay, I got the information I need, and I will fit it into the story.
As you mentioned weaponry, I mean, one of the things that comes into play is that, you know, essentially a couple of pieces of weaponry are kept as souvenirs, and then mm-hmm. your sergeant is able to kind of identify potential suspects, or at least eliminate yeah. people based on these things. And you have a quote, or at least you have him saying, sentiment towards weapons from a previous war had always had a way of getting you killed in the next one. Is that a sentiment you'd come across in researching on the history of war, or is that something you kind of just wrote whole cloth?
I think I wrote, I'm trying to remember the, but that's quite interesting that I said it, but I think that does happen where, you know, people find old weapons from the war and they store them or they keep them, and sometimes they're used accidentally, or they're blow, you know, like you find the people, they're still finding bombs in Europe in World War II, or even from World War I. But I think that's sort of like something Newman would think about, you know, because he's sort of, even though he thinks back of the World War I, he's the kind of guy who wants to move forward, and you know, the war is almost over, especially the second war, the one he's in again. Mm-hmm. This war is almost over, and let's try to maybe move forward and get away from all the violence that he's seen. He's sort of an optimist in a sense, but also he's a very cynical realist at the same time.
But, yeah, developing his character, like, did you have a sense of who he would be before you put pen to paper, or like, did that kind of come out as you were writing him? Like, did you kind of map out like what his personality or character arc would be?
It was a bit like that. I when I write, I do, you know, I have the character in mind, and I've been thinking about it for a long time, and before I start writing. And then when I start writing, it things do come out as you write, as things about the character. I mean, initially I based him on the Lee Marvin character in The Big Red One, who is the same sort of like gruff kind of sergeant who, you know, was in World War One and now is leading these young kids in World War Two. So I had sort of that vision in my head when I was thinking about him. But then as things progressed, you know, I had to realize that he was a policeman in between the wars. He had some skills, he had some knowledge, and he's a bit world weary. So I just sort of developed him a bit more as I wrote. And that's usually what happens. And then you fix things up as you go back and forth in various drafts.
Right. Yeah. Now, one thing, I don't know, I'm not sure if I've ever spoken to someone like midway through a series with a recurring character, but yeah. You know, how do you write a character so that, you know, someone who hasn't read the first book in the Camp 133 series, like how do you introduce a character who's already been introduced, or like, you know, retain the story that you established in the first book for those who are joining you for the second book after reading the first? Like, is it, what kind of like balancing act is that for you to like flesh the character out quickly or fill people in on what happened in book one in a way that isn't you know, a really long drawn out thing for those who were with you from the get-go.
That's a big balancing act. And that's a lot when you're writing a series and you're in the second book or third book and you're going, okay, I wanted this to stand alone on itself, but I also want people to realize that there's other stories in the past that they can pick up and buy, but I don't want to give away what happened in the past too much, you know, because there's certain scenes in Dishonor where he reflects on the past, but he doesn't give away what exactly happened. And there's certain things where, like in the second book, he has injuries that he's still suffering from the past previous situation. So that maybe intrigues people to go back what happened to him there. But at the same time, you want it to be a whole new story. So it's always a balancing act and trying to figure out what can I release? What can I write? And what can I, and sometimes again, you go too far and you have to go back in the editing. And a lot of it comes back in the editing as you, your own editing, not with the editor, your own editing. You got to go back and go think what happened in the previous one. And then you got to tone it down and bring it down. But I, you know, any author who's written a series has to deal with that. You have to deal with, you know, this is a new book that I hope you enjoy by itself. But at the same time, there's another book, but you don't need the other book completely to enjoy this one.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely seems like a real tightrope walk. The decision to have both Neumann and Aiken, his deputy, carry these injuries from the previous book, mm-hmm. you know, hamstringing your central characters a bit. Is that like give you a different sort of way to play with their character, right? Like kind of setting up limitations gives you maybe more opportunity.
It gives more opportunity, but it also makes it more realistic. Because then I've read a lot of crime fiction, and then you notice in the previous book that the main character was shot, and the next book they're fine, and it's like 4 months later, and you're going like, well, come on. And I think that's what happened when I was writing my Leo DeRush books. Leo got beat up in a scene, and I was writing a certain way, and when the editor was going on it, says no, he would still be hurt, so he's gotta move slower. So I wanted to keep that to make it more realistic. Like, you know, stuff happened in June 6 months before or 4 months before, and as a human being, you're still gonna have these injuries. You know, you're still gonna recover from, because these are serious injuries that happened to them. You know. And bones were broken, you know, they were in the hospital. So you're not going to bounce back, and you're going to, you know, and if you're going to get in a fight again, it's going to hurt. You're going to pull back, or you're going to take things easier, or you might start getting addicted to pills and things like that.
Yeah.
I think this makes it more realistic when, you know, you see a character, and if you read the first book, you know, bad things have happened in the second book. If you see them still suffering from those injuries, or even emotionally still dealing with the past without giving away too much, then that makes it more real. It makes these characters and the events they're dealing with, for me, that makes it more realistic than just, you know, I got beat up and then I woke up the next day and I was fine. I mean, even Captain America doesn't get up that fast. So how can a regular person do that?
True enough. Neumann does not have the super soldier serum.
No.
You do introduce a new person to help out, this Naup. Basically because Aiken is sidelined for the first little bit with those injuries that we're talking about. Does that, like, you know, introduction of like kind of a new junior partner for Neumann, like give you some opportunities in terms of like setting up a different dynamic than you had established in the first book between Neumann and Aiken? Like, does it give you some play with, you know, how he is as a boss, or bringing in a new guy?
It was fun because when I was writing the first chapter of the second book, I said, well, Aiken may not be there because, you know, he got hurt pretty bad in the second one. So where is he and who would step in? And Naup was a very minor character in the first book. He had a few scenes where, you know, Neumann said, go do this for me and go do that for me. So I just said, well, he might be the natural choice for, say, come, you've helped me before, come help me as the, you know, second or third man to help out here and there. And so that was nice to create a different sort of dynamic. So people don't get comfortable. Oh, this is going to happen. Aiken's going to say that. And that does happen later on in the book, but just in the beginning to show a little bit of thing and also go like, where's, you know, if you read the first book, where's Aiken? What happened to him? Did he survive his wounds? Is from the previous thing? Is he okay? Things like that. So did he get sent home? Because sometimes, you know, if a soldier was POW was injured badly enough, they sent them home. They sent them back to Germany. So that did happen. So I just wanted to, you know, mix things up, not just for the reader, but also for myself in writing, just to make things more interesting for myself.
Well, speaking of mixing things up, I don't know, it's about 5 or 6 chapters in, maybe Aiken takes over.
You have
a couple chapters where it's told from his point of view. Is that to kind of provide you with an opportunity as a writer to kind of write inside a different character's voice, or is it because Neumann isn't involved in specific actions, but you need to kind of document those actions and how things kind of forward the plot?
Yeah, it's a bit of both, of, you know, just getting a different point of view, because, you know, Aiken has a totally different point of view than the sergeant does, and just to bring him in more, because, you know, people didn't see him for the first 3 chapters, and then, oh, he's back in, so let's bring him in more, so he's still part of the story. Because from what I got from the first book, people like the character and they like certain bits, so it's nice to bring them back in and give him something to do, and it fit nicely in with the plot, and it worked, seemed to work quite well. It just seemed to be comfortable bringing him back in that way. And but also have Knopp here and there and have that sort of thing continuing. And then bring a few other characters from the first book back in a little bit. Because with a series, you got to do that every so often. You know, you bring in these characters that were there in the first book, and then you, you know, sort of give a quick introduction, but don't give too much away. So and through their dialogue, you realize that they've been here before. They have this connection somehow with the other main characters in the previous story.
Do you keep like notes on individual characters and kind of like what backstory you've revealed and what else you could kind of like build up in the future? Is that something that you kind of like keep a dossier on?
No, all my notes are in my head.
Okay.
I don't work well with notes because I would just lose them.
Yeah.
And if I would, you know, oh, I have my notes on this and I would go search for it, I'd go, where is that? And I would lose it. So I just sort of keep things in my head, and, you know, I guess it's filed somewhere in my brain, and when it's time to call it up, it comes up, and then I bring it in.
Right. Yeah. Now, do you see like another return to this camp in another book? Like, is that?
I'd like to, but, you know, it was a bit of delay, and from the first book and second book, and I did made some changes in my career and how I write. I'm not sure if I would like to, but it depends on the response to this one. Mm-hmm. You know, whether I have time to, I mean, it takes time, and I'll have to research more, and I'll have to spend time writing. It'll take 6 months or to a year, so I have to figure out whether I have the time to devote to this. I mean, I was hoping maybe 4 books in the series, but, you know, the delay through many things, including COVID, really changed things. So you just sort of say, well, maybe I'll go back to it and just see where I am.
Right. Yeah. Cause I was curious, obviously this is, you know, there is a window to this camp, right? Because at a certain point, the war ends, these people leave this camp. And like you said, it was bulldozed and it's gone. So you only have, you know, a horizon in sight in terms of like, they're not going to be stuck in this camp forever.
No, that's the thing. That's why it would have been a limited series to, like, you know, maybe 4 books. Cause, you know, I was foreseeing something near the end of the, you know, in the spring near the end of the war, or just around the time when the war ended, and how they dealt with that. And then in the real world, in the historical thing, they weren't sent back in the beginning. They actually kept them there till the fall so they could work on the harvest, because none of the soldiers, young men,
were back.
So, and then once they finished with the harvest, they weren't sent home again. They were sent to England to help with the reconstruction there for about a year or two. But I didn't want to get that far I probably just stick with them stuck in Alberta. I didn't want to go all the way to, you know, England and do research and see what happens there, because then that would be just too much work and time. So I see there's a potential probably for 2 more books. It's just whether I have the time or the inclination to go that way.
Is it, is it difficult, like, if you, you know, envision a character like this, you know, Newman, and then kind of have to let them go at a certain point?
I think it's a bit mixed. It's a mixed thing because, you know, it wasn't a long thing where now I have to let him go. It just seemed because a few delays in the book, it just seemed like, you know, it just sort of faded away. And then the book came out and, oh, these were interesting. But I sort of almost did let them go. But it's also like I could bring them back if the opportunity, the right opportunity came up, would be to bring them back. It wouldn't be that hard. But, you know, my Leo DeRoche books ended at the book three, mostly because no one wanted to publish book four. So I had to let that one go. And sometimes you just got to let characters go and move on to the next book. It's how you can't sit there and lament that, you know, I have this character is over. You just say, okay, this character, this thing has ended at this time. And now what am I going to work on next? And for me, that's not always that difficult because, you know, as many writers do, you have other ideas in your head and you go like, oh, okay, I can work on this one or this other idea I can start fleshing out and see where that takes me.
Then it becomes time to meet a new person.
Then it becomes time to meet a new person. And sometimes it's just one book for that person and you move on. Like the book that came out before this, when the Red Chesterfield, that was just a one-off thing as one, you know, one main character in the family. And I didn't see a need to make it that into a series. It was, you know, there's no need for me. Not every crime book has to be a series.
Sure enough. Well, Dishonor in Camp 133 is the second in the Sergeant Newman series. It's out by Turnstone Press. Wayne, thanks very much for taking some time to talk about the book.
Oh, thanks for having me. This is great. And I can't wait to, I guess there's some sort of thing on the 16th where I'm talking with Sam Weeb about crime. And that's going to be exciting too.
Right. That is, of course, the Cold Case Festival of Crime Cold Literature event.
Right. Wonderful. Yeah, that's going to be great. That's going to be fun. So
perfect. Well, thanks again, Wayne.
Thanks for having me.